I'm Shelley Schlender for MeAndMyDiabetes.com. Paul Berger is a medical doctor who specializes in holistic health. He encourages people to improve their health with lifestyle changes. And occasionally, he says he sees that changing lifestyle produces miracles. One of those miracles for him is the story of Amber O'Hearn, who for years had been prescribed mood-stabilizing drugs to help her with major depression and bipolar disorder. And then Amber changed to an unconventional diet. Here's Dr. Paul Berger's account of the miracle transformation of Amber O'Hearn, along with some other surprising transformations he's seen through dietary changes, including some of his own.
The best stories I can tell you from memory, but I just found some that I'd completely forgotten about. These are all the miracles.
What did you call them?
Miracles. These are all the things where people just change their diet a little bit, and they had huge improvement in their health.
Paul Berger, did they change them all the same way?
No, everybody's different. Everybody's an individual, and sometimes some people can tolerate X, Y, and Z, but not Q, and other people can tolerate Q, X, and Y, but not Z, or they just made a different change in their life. So everybody's an individual. All these stories are completely different.
What are some you want to share?
What's my favorite, or where should we start? Did you want to start with the story of the one person who came to you? Did you want to ask me about her? Do you want me to tell you my perception of her story?
Well, tell me this. Will we have better perspective if you tell me a couple of other stories first, or do you want to go straight to Amber O'Hearn?
Oh, that's right. We can use her name, can't we? Amber was one of my most life-saving stories.
I'm Shelley Schlender for MeAndMyDiabetes.com. Amber agrees that how she changed her diet was life-saving. That's because she suffered from adult-onset depression. For over a decade, doctors prescribed to Amber powerful prescriptions to stabilize her mood. Amber says they didn't work very well for her over time, and they had many side effects. So she was frequently, seriously depressed, and as part of that, had a long history of imagining suicide, and was at high risk to someday carry it out. Amber herself writes about it this way, and I quote, from Amber, I've had periods where I wanted to kill myself, no question. There was also an incident back when I was around 21 or 22 when I did start popping some pills, one by one, with suicide in mind. But I stopped long before it got truly dangerous. That's the end of the quote from Amber. Now back to medical doctor Paul Berger.
When she came to me, these early episodes of her visits here, her face was always looking down, and her children were running around the room, and she wasn't taking care of them. She just looked disheveled and very unhappy, and she came in telling me the story, like you just said. I've been depressed since I was 20, and I'm fatigued, I have no energy.
This is Shelley for MeAndMyDiabetes.com. About Paul Berger's description of her, Amber writes, the stuff about not taking care of my appearance is quite true. I felt so badly about the way I looked that it seemed pointless to try to improve it, almost humiliating. I was so self-critical that I would often have thoughts like, why pretend you could possibly look attractive? In other words, I was actually ashamed to try to show care for my appearance because I thought it would be even more laughable. That kind of thinking is characteristic of depression as I experienced it. Hopelessness and self-loathing. Now back to medical doctor Paul Berger.
Then I didn't see her for 3 or 4 years. She came back one day with her kids for her kids' appointment, not even for herself. And she was actually interacting with her kids. And she had brushed her hair. We did the baby exam first, and they said, Amber, you look great. What are you doing that's different in your life? And she said, oh, I changed my diet. And I said, oh, well, you know, I'm interested. Tell me what you did. And she said, oh, you wouldn't want to know. And I said, no, I do want to know. You're a very different person.
Very different person.
A different person. She was just looking up and looking out and taking care of her kids. And I said, I really do want to know what you've done. She said, well, it's meat only. And I'm embarrassed about it. And I said, Amber, I can't argue that. It's working for you. So just wonderful. Congratulations. See you, why don't you come for your own physical someday? I didn't see her for months and months, and she brought in one of the other kids 6 or 8 or 10 months later. And this time her child was sitting on her lap. She was reading a story to her kid. She had makeup on, you know, just a tiny bit of eyeliner or something. She looked just well taken care of. And I said, Amber, what are you doing now? She's, oh, same thing. And I said, meat only? And she said, yeah, just meat. I said, you know, I recommend meat and vegetables for a lot of people. I'm sure you could have some vegetables. We'd have to pick them carefully. And she said, no, thanks. It was a great story. And I think it was the third visit when her husband came in with her. And I said, look, I'm sure you could have some vegetables. Aren't you getting, like, constipated? Just meat? I'm sure you can have. We'll stay off the nightshades, okay? And we won't do starchy vegetables. And her husband looked at me and said, Dr. Berger, I have known Amber for, what did he say at that point? Almost 20 years? 15, 20 years? And he said, this is the first time I've known her that she's been sane. So just leave it alone, okay? just let her eat her meat only. So this is one of the beautiful examples where in medicine and in nutrition and chiropractic and naturopathy, we learn so much about diets, and so many different diets can help different people in so many ways. I would never recommend meat only, but this is a wonderful example where, you know, people are different. I would not recommend that for other people.
Now, Paul Berger, you're a medical doctor who works holistically. You see a lot of different ways to eat. You just said that you would never recommend an all-meat diet. Do you know details of why it works for Amber, why she does not have vitamin C deficiencies or B vitamin, not B vitamin, because there's a lot of B vitamin in meat, but other kinds of deficiencies on this meat diet? Do you think that she eats lean meat, or does she eat fat meat? What does she eat?
Well, Amber doesn't come in very often. She mostly comes in for her kids. And as I already showed you...
Does that mean that she's pretty healthy?
I do see her walking around the neighborhood a lot, smiling and looking at the birds. I see her in the community, but I don't know if she has any vitamin deficiencies, because she's not coming in, hasn't come in recently for a physical, so I could check vitamin deficiencies.
What she told me mm-hmm. is that she is basically never sick. She hardly ever gets a cold or the flu. Mm-hmm. Her teeth are in great shape. If she had scurvy, which is one of the classic concerns about somebody not eating fruits and vegetables, her teeth would be loose, and that kind of thing is not happening. She doesn't have cavities. She eats a lot of fat. She eats about 75% of her calories as fat, is my guess, from what she was describing. She always makes sure that she adds more fat in. If she buys meats at the grocery store, she asks them to save their fats so that she can have them, and she uses them to grind together with the meat to make sausage. She told me that some of the meat she eats after cooking them a very long time, or in the equivalent of a slow cooker, to get lots of minerals out of them. Other meat she eats rather rare, which means she would be getting a lot of the enzymes that are naturally in meat. Mm-hmm. So that's what she described, and she showed me all the different ways she prepares a huge variety of meats, but there's nothing but meat.
So did she mention if she's using bone and bone broth at all?
Yes. Amber showed me how she makes bone broth soups.
Good. I think that's one of the best supplements that she could take and that other people could take as well, is getting those minerals and vitamins, as you mentioned, in the slow cooker, out of bones. So that's wonderful. I do think we can get everything we need out of meat when you do it that carefully, but I don't have proof of that. I don't have her blood work. I don't have her white cell analysis. There are a few tests that check the contents of your white cells for vitamins and minerals. They think that's the best way to check. And I'd love to do that on her.
In other words, you've seen her, and from the evaluation of a seasoned medical doctor, you look at her and you say, she's healthier than I've ever seen her, ever.
That's definite. But I don't know that it's best for her long term. I don't know that she's getting everything she needs for long term health. And frankly, I don't have the studies. I'm sure other people do, but I don't have the studies on meat-only diet for long-term health.
Amber told me that she studied historical documents such as Stefansson, who is the Arctic explorer who went and lived with the Inuit and ate their all-meat diet. And although many people think that the Inuit, the Eskimos in the North Pole, ate fruit berries during the summer, or that they ate the contents of the stomachs of seals to get those vegetables out. It doesn't look like that really happened, according to Stefansson. And he was even locked up for a while in a ward in New York by very skeptical doctors who thought that he must be lying about how he was eating. And he said, just feed me what I want. And they started out feeding him lots of lean meat, and he said, nope, I want the fat in it too. And they'd follow him around as he went, and he exercised in Central Park, and he came back, and he was totally healthy.
Nice.
And so that's the kind of background that I think Amber was looking at, saying, it seems to work for some other people, and there may be forums where people study and eat all meat diets. She may not be the only person in the United States doing this.
Oh, no, I'm sure she's not. I'm sure she's not. I'm sure there are many other people. I'm just saying I haven't studied them. So I can't guarantee safety because I haven't read that literature.
And yet, you know that Amber is somebody who has struggled with a major mood disorder.
Yeah.
And she doesn't now.
Yeah.
Do you have any guesses about why an all-meat diet or choosing to make that choice might make a difference?
Yes. And that's why I copied some other examples, because I've seen mood disorders improve in several other people. Like a quarter of these are mood disorders and three quarters are other things. But I've seen many instances where food irritates people's brains and emotions.
But Paul Berger, we eat food through our mouths. Mm-hmm. It goes through our digestive tract, into our stomachs, and out the other end. Mm-hmm. And nowhere in that pathway is a brain.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. As you remember, everything is connected to everything. You need nutrition in your stomach to feed your brain. That's number one. But also, many, many gastroenterologists, not all our modern conventional gastroenterologists, but many gastroenterologists over the years and other scientists have said, don't forget, many of your neurotransmitters are made in your stomach, in your intestines mostly. So you could consider, and they like to throw out this line, you really could consider your gut as your second brain.
All right, so many of our neurotransmitters and our hormones are made in response to what's going in and out of our digestive tract.
Not to response. Those cells make the neurotransmitters. The cells in your stomach make some of your neurotransmitters.
But meaning that if the cells that make the neurotransmitters are stressed, say food is stressing them, then they could send a very different signal than if they're not being stressed.
Definitely, definitely. And they can be increased or decreased, limited by what's going on in the intestines, because those are the cells that need to be healthy to make some of these neurotransmitters. And so if you get inflammation in that part of your body, you know, it's going to spread to other parts of your body too, but particularly inflammation and inflammatory reaction from some sort of sensitivity, we can't call it allergy because it doesn't all fit our definition of allergy, then you get malfunctioning cells in the intestines and you don't get the serotonin and other neurohormones that you need for feeling good and for mental clarity. Because one of my examples is ADD, how gluten and dairy and sometimes other substances can be completely cleared up. ADD can be completely cleared up when you change the diet.
Well, let's hear some examples, because from what you just said, it varies from person to person.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so what are some examples you've seen?
So today we were trying to find the name of this boy who came in years ago, and I said, well, I just saw his sister. How old is she now? I figured out she's 9. So I say, go back to the day that she was 3 days old, because the day that I saw her was the first day I saw this family. And her brother's 4 years older, and he was in here that day. And the mother had this brand new baby, and she was exhausted from a difficult delivery. And she said, I know we're here to see the baby, Dr. Berger, but what can I do about this boy who's driving me crazy? And in this room, we're trying to examine this newborn baby who's, you know, this is really life important to make sure she gets on her feet, right? And this boy is climbing not just the walls, he's climbing me to get at my stethoscope, like a little monkey or an iguana climbing up my... Can I listen to your didn't say stuff. Let's go, can I listen to that thing? Can I listen to that? Can you look in my eyes? Look in my eyes. It was the most hyperactive kid I've ever seen. I mean, and he was very sweet. And he was clearly quite intelligent for his age. He might have said stethoscope for that matter. But I said, look, we have to examine your baby. We have to spend the time today on your baby. Just take him off gluten and dairy and come and see me next week. Well, I didn't see him that week, but she came in the following week for him. And she said, you know he has ADD, hyperactivity. And so you know that he's in occupational therapy already. So we've started that, but we were getting nowhere. And she said, so we just did what you said, the gluten, took out the gluten and dairy, and we brought him to OT a few days later, and the OT said, I've never seen anybody change so much in 1 week with anything. Not even Ritalin has changed her patients this much. And sure enough, he was there, and he asked me the same question, Dr. Berger, could I listen to that as today? But he did it standing from the middle of the floor, looking up at me with those big, beautiful brown eyes, instead of climbing or climbing the wall. And he would look over at the otoscope, the ophthalmoscope on the wall, and say, can we look at that next? And I said, yeah, can you wait a moment? Sure. I mean, this was 2 weeks later. This kid was completely changed. And then I saw him like 6 months or 12 months later, and then a couple years later. And the mom told me that here is this 5-year-old boy who would go to birthday parties and would say, because he's so smart, he would say to these parents at a birthday party, I'd really like some cake and ice cream, but I don't like how it makes me feel. Just magnificent story about this family. Since then, he's like 11 or 12 now, something like that. And since then, he goes off the diet a lot. And I have the follow-up notes from his mom, her comments on what he's like when he gets off a little bit and he gets a little bit more irritable, a little bit more unmanageable, but he knows and he tries to go back to the diet, but he doesn't really want to because it's so restrictive.
Well, he is a teenager now and he can't eat pizza. Yeah. It's pizza and ice cream.
Yeah.
And sodas. Yeah.
And it's hard to stay on it. And I have a similar story about an 80-year-old when you're ready.
Well, I'm thinking about the boy who was probably on ADD medications when you saw him when he was 5. Do you think he was?
Wasn't on medicines yet, no. Mm-mm.
But I'm sure that many of the people who worked with him were thinking of that.
Oh, yes. They really wanted him on that.
Did he ever have to get on ADD medicines?
No, he's never gone on meds.
He never went on meds?
No.
What do you think was happening so that simply by eliminating dairy and gluten, which means primarily breads and wheat, mm-hmm. you know, wheat-based products yeah. especially, what do you think was going on?
So other people will give you better explanations, more biochemical explanations than I have readily available to discuss. I've heard some of the explanations over the years, but I'll give you kind of a general explanation. As we were talking about before, you make so many of these neurotransmitters and hormones in your gut, and the balance or imbalance is determined immediately, and those hormones go to the rest of your body. I mean, it can damage the kidneys. You can have kidney problems from inflammation in your gut. So it's about the immune system, and it's autoimmune, and I don't know. Some people think they do, and they'll have wonderful theories about how the immune system flares up and what cytokines are released from inflammatory process and how it changes the actual hormones, but then also the balance of hormones.
Lauren Cordain, for instance, would mm-hmm. say that a lot of the problem comes from the anti-nutrients in food. Foods don't really want to be eaten. Grains would rather just go through our digestive tract and end up in a great big pile of fertilizer so they can grow again. And so they have certain nutrients that if they get into the digestive tract will break through the intestinal wall in minuscule ways and will cause the immune system to go, oh my gosh, there's undigested proteins here. They must be viruses. We must attack. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We must
yeah.
attack.
Yeah.
And then with dairy, mm-hmm. his thought is that one reason that so many people do have sensitivities to dairy is it's the opposite issue, that in a small infant,
there are supposed to be substances from the mother, certain mm-hmm. larger molecules that need to get through the digestive tract and into the bloodstream as part of protecting and inoculating the child or the baby cow or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And once we get past the stage where we need those, they can mm-hmm. open up the gut mm-hmm. in ways that lets these undigested mm-hmm. molecules through, which upsets the immune mm-hmm. system. So that's a geeky explanation.
Well, geeky, it's also anthropomorphizing a little bit, and I love the story of it. But what you're also getting at is the leaky gut phenomenon. And then don't forget the whole biome issue and what happens there. But what you were describing is what we've been calling leaky gut for 30 years or 50 years. And if the gut gets inflamed, then the normal barriers just break down. Just like when you get an inflammation here and you don't have good skin to keep bacteria from the outside from getting in. Well, in the gut, you don't have a good barrier to keep those macromolecules you were talking about from getting into the bloodstream. And then you've got basically molecules of gluten or molecules of peanut or molecules of cauliflower in your brain instead of just letting the gut absorb the calcium that you need from the cauliflower and the calcium going to the brain. You're getting whole molecules of cauliflower.
It's supposed to be like our digestive system breaks everything down like Tinker Toys.
Yeah.
And it's the digestive system is meant to take these complex molecules, break them down into little pieces like a disassembled Tinker Toy.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then the immune system goes, wait a second, this might be an attacker.
Yes. And so then in the brain or the kidney or wherever, you start making this great big immune response in here after having had it in here, and then you get more damage.
In any event, that's the mm-hmm. geeky side. But mm-hmm. you've been observing people mm-hmm. and seeing how people change with their mm-hmm. health and their attention. And this now young man or young teenager is one example where you've seen such a dramatic change. Now, have you seen people where if they change and get rid of gluten and dairy, it makes no difference?
Oh, yeah. And those people get so disgusted with those of us who do feel sick on those things. And I say, well, I don't feel sick, so clearly it's all in your head. Like, no, you're different and you're lucky. So thank your lucky stars. And sometimes those people realize it years later, when it finally builds up. And then they say, oh my goodness, now I've got the same thing. Did I get it from you? Did I get it from my wife who's been complaining about this all her life? I'm like, no, you just finally, your body finally got tired of it. And finally started recognizing the food as foreign and not the best for you.
Or can there be people who are sick and they always eat those foods and never realize that's adding to a subtle problem that they can't? It's like somebody who smokes, mm-hmm. who doesn't realize that if they stop smoking and get through the addiction, they might feel differently, they might smell differently, they might taste differently.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think this is a new thing. Some people like to think it's because of GMO and because of the chemicals we now have. But if you go to Colonial Williamsburg and you take the tour, the first stop on the tour is the same stop that all those governors had to do when they lived in Colonial Williamsburg in the 1700s. They all had to go by the apothecary first thing to get through the day because they were so unhealthy. They were so miserable. Their number one problem was constipation, according to the tour guides. And their only treatment was mercury, so that's how you could follow where they settled in the country in the 1700s by mercury deposits.
That's disgusting. But that is true, that's how they found European settlements.
Yes, but they were so unhealthy. And I'll bet you a lot of it had to do with not getting enough dairy, eating too much corn and wheat and dairy. And they just never knew it. Took hundreds of years for them to realize what was making them so sick, but they were not healthy. The Indians were pretty healthy. I'm sure they had their own health issues.
Of course, the Indians, the Plains Indians, the warriors lived on an all-meat diet.
Yeah.
They actually, historically, they left the vegetables to be women's food.
Ah.
Is historically the case. Uh-huh. So they ate Amber's kind of diet.
And they were really tough, we think.
They were pretty healthy, though, compared with the settlers.
Yeah.
They were tall, that some of them lived a long time if they didn't die of accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're back, getting back to this.
Yeah.
You gave me the case study of the young man who weed and dairy, getting rid of it, really helped him. What's another miracle story?
Well, I wanted to tell you about the 80-year-old. And she came to me when she was in her late 60s, early 70s, many years ago. And she had been on, she had rheumatoid arthritis. And she came to me for referrals to the rheumatologist and to get her gold injections and her methotrexate. And then I didn't see her for several years.
Yeah, now let's stop. So gold injections, why are those supposed to help with rheumatoid arthritis?
I don't know the biochemistry, but I do know that they're very toxic.
And how about methotrexate? Is that something that basically puts a straitjacket on the immune system and says, don't work right now, just hold still so that
and
you don't...
And so all those people get pneumonia more often, and colds more often. And they
cancer
have
more often.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, but you're right.
Mm-hmm. So it's methotrexate is an immune suppressant with the idea, well, if the joints are being attacked, let's stop the part of the body that fights things.
Yeah.
But it doesn't just stop attacking the joints. It stops it from saving you from invaders.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So she was on all those drugs for years. And, you know, I talked to her back in the late 90s or early century about some diet. And she didn't come in to see me 6 years ago. She came in with her granddaughter for her granddaughter's physical. And I said, I'll call her Mary, because her name's not Mary. I'll call her Mary, because I always call her Mary, because it's the most common name. And I said, Mary, I haven't seen you in years. How are you doing? And she said, oh, I'm fine. I said, why haven't you come in? She said, I don't need to see you anymore. And I said, so what have you done that's helped your rheumatoid arthritis so much? And she said, well, I tried your diet 10 years ago, and I went off gluten, I went off dairy, and I felt better. But it wasn't until I went off all grains, and the last one was rice, that, look, rheumatoid arthritis, it's all gone. And I said, well, that's fantastic. And, well, come in for a physical sometime. We'll just check your kidney and liver and, you know, and your moles and all that. And I saw her a year or so later, and then she said, you know, I'm starting to feel achy again. I said, well, what's different in your life? And she said, well, my old high school sweetheart looked me up, and we're both divorced, or no, widowed, we started
dating. That's right,
dating.
Because she was going to be 80 soon, so anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And we started eating out, and in fact, we went to Paris, and the first time she went to Paris, by the way, this is kind of an aside, she ate everything and felt okay. And so this is another big part of medicine, and this is why I'm telling this aside. I think that A, she hadn't been eating those things very much, but B, the joy factor was so huge, seeing her old boyfriend and going to Paris, that I think somehow the positive hormones that her body made in response to this wonderful situation made up for any inflammation and kept the inflammation away. But after they'd been dating for a few years, and the travel was starting to bring her, and the travel and the food on her wonderful travels, and some of the food she was starting to eat out here. And I have that as one of the examples where she said, well, I'm having more food here and there, and I'm relaxing my diet a little bit, and I'm getting more achy, and I think I need to see the rheumatologist again. And then she comes in saying, look, it's gone again. It's all, I have no more arthritis. I've been eating the diet really well, staying off all grains and dairy. And by the way, another aside, just for the record, it's different food for different people. Some people have to stay off nuts. I'm one of those. I react to gluten and dairy and rice and nuts. Some people have to stay off beans. It's getting close to Amber's diet. Getting close.
But you still eat fruit. Is that right?
Oh, I eat very little fruit for other reasons. I eat very little fruit just because of the sugar. That's a different issue. Insulin problems in my family, and I do notice some insulin problems in myself, so I just stay away from fruit for sugar.
What do you mean, insulin problems? What's the sign of insulin problems?
My gut. I still have a belly, and so that's syndrome X. That's metabolic syndrome, I'm not the best shape. And so this shape can still, is the shape that is known to lead towards insulin resistance. Plus, I have it in my family. So I try not to eat sugars for that reason. I try to eat very little carbs, including nuts. There's a lot of carb in nuts, too.
In other words, you eat a low-carb diet.
Very low carb.
Very low carb. Yeah. How many grams of carbohydrates a day do you eat?
Well, ideally, I'd like to keep it to 10 to 20, but I probably usually 20 to 50.
Grams of carbohydrate a day. Did you realize, Paul Berger, medical doctor, that you are well below what the American Diabetes Association says a person needs to be eating for carbohydrates to keep your brain working?
Yeah. My brain, I have scored better and better on my board exams every time I have to take them. I scored a perfect score on two of the six sections recently, which I never did in my 20s and my 30s.
And this is even though
on
you're
carbs.
Older and you were on carbs before, and you're not eating nearly as many carbs as the American Diabetes Association says you should.
My brain is so much clearer. So that's another example that I want to bring up at some point in time, that you can't believe lab tests. You can't, and this I learned in medical school. I was taught in medical school by the conventional internal medicine doctors, never treat a lab test. Treat a patient. Because even though we have wonderful diagnostic capabilities with lab tests, they only give us a direction to look. You should not treat people simply because of that. Okay? It's great information, but information can be misleading too, and you have to see how it fits the clinical picture and the individual clinical picture. So I do better. Amber does better. I said that I want to check her vitamin levels. Even if her vitamin levels are a little bit low in some areas, I'm not going to recommend gluten, dairy, corn, and soy. We're not.
How about watermelon and bananas and lemons?
Lemons, probably. Watermelon is like cotton candy. I mean, have you ever stuck watermelon into your dehydrator? It comes out, it looks, tastes, and feels like cotton candy. If you want healthy cotton candy, put watermelon in your oven. It's phenomenal.
Is it truly healthy?
Oh, gosh, no. No, it's pure sugar. Cotton candy is not healthy.
But is watermelon dried healthy if you want healthy cotton?
No, it's pure sugar. Okay. Is take a spoonful of honey good for you? Well, the vitamins are good for you, but the sugar's not.
You know, I heard something from Dale Bredesen from the Buck Institute about glycosylation. It's, you know, where a protein molecule inside the body ends up getting some sugar stuck to it, which can happen if blood sugars are high or if sugar hangs around in the bloodstream. And what he said is that once you have a protein that's been glycosylated, it's like it's got a few extra molecules stuck to it, and guess what the body thinks it is then? An invader. Because, again, it's changed its shape. Mm. And since the immune system goes after things that are weird shapes, it can mean the immune system goes, oh, my gosh, that must be an invader. Attack anything that looks similar to this. Mm-hmm. And his mention was just very casual that this is another way that autoimmune conditions can get set up, is through a sugar load in the bloodstream, changing the shape of proteins that are supposed to function in a very specific way, and not have a ball and chain of extra sugars stuck to them. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes a lot of sense, yeah.
But that's geeky again. Let's get back to how you like to look at medicine, which is look at the case studies and watch the person, see how
they do. Individual, yeah.
Yeah. Who else is a miracle?
I've had so many people come in this year with just short little quips. I went off gluten and this eczema that I've had since I was a child is gone. I went off dairy, and my mood disorder is completely gone. What's this one? His oldest brother, father, they all have ADD. We did the elimination diet, and it's amazing, transformative. He's a different child. Can I give him any weed at all now? I don't want to go back to how he was. It's so peaceful this way.
That's a mom.
That's a mom a couple months ago. testament to good nutrition. I mean, I so many quick little stories like that. What was the other one I wanted to tell you? We have Amber. Those are the three stories that I tell the most, the three that I just told you. And then I get so many of these other... you know, I could tell my own stories. I had acne from the time I was 12 until 19, and I was learning about different diets in college, and I learned about macrobiotics, and I was already vegetarian at the time, and so I went off dairy thinking it was more macrobiotic, and overnight, after all these years, overnight, the next day I woke up with no pimples. Okay, that's I was 19.
And so what you changed was what again?
All I did was go off dairy. That's all I did. I was eating lots of other things. And then a few years later in medical school, I started getting back pain and my early 20s. And I went to every chiropractor and physical therapist and acupuncturist in Boulder to try and treat my back pain. And I had it for 10 years and they'd all make me feel better. But I'd wake up the next morning with back pain. And I started learning around 2000 about people complaining about bloating and indigestion with gluten. And so I went off gluten. And overnight, the next morning, for the first time that I could recall in 10 years, started slowly, but I felt like it was every morning for 10 years. Certainly was every morning for the last 3 years. I had no back pain. And my wife stretched her arms and yawned and looked across at me and said, "You didn't snore last night." I didn't even know I was a snorer. But overnight, just gluten, just wheat. No, I don't think I had gluten, but I wasn't thinking of gluten. I was just thinking of wheat. Overnight. And I've only had back pain 2 half days since then. It was both days that I had gluten-free products. The gluten-free English muffins, I had two before a ski day about 7 years ago, 6 years ago. And I skied all morning, but by midday I was starting to feel not so good in my back. And I ski a lot. And never have back pain other than that day when I had those English muffins. And then because it was a day where we were in a place I didn't know what food to be out to get, I brought a third English muffin with peanut butter, by the way. So it's English muffin and peanut butter. I was incapacitated. I couldn't get up from the chair after lunch.
Back pain.
Back pain came back, just like the back pain I'd had for 10 years that went away when I went off wheat.
One theory that a chiropractor told me is that sometimes if someone's digestion gets inflamed enough, then the pressure of the digestive tract being swollen up puts pressure on the spine.
Yeah.
You think that's what
was
happening?
That's what I've been saying for 10 years, yeah.
It was
16 years.
It was just a little bit of extra gas.
No, not gas. No, it was inflammation of the intestinal wall, not gas.
Oh.
It was fluid. In fact, I can gain 3.5 pounds in a few hours of eating gluten, and I can lose it in 24 hours of not eating gluten. Total water weight, total inflammation weight in the intestines.
And you think when that's pushing against the spine, that can cause back pain?
Pushing or pulling. Like if the intestines are swollen, they kind of pull this way. And then I think, in my case anyhow, the back spasms to kind of try and maintain the posture it's used to. And so that's what I think is happening in my case.
Do you like not having back pain?
I had to hire the kids next door to come and blow up my children's toys. I couldn't use a bike pump for those last 3 years. That's why I said I was waking up every day for years in back pain. I couldn't use a bike pump. And I bike a lot now, and I use the pump pretty regularly. I don't have back pain anymore. Unless I have too much gluten, and usually that's just for I have back, a little mild back discomfort for, you know, a few hours because I don't do it regularly.
If gluten is so bad for you, why do you eat it?
Because I love to eat, and I love to eat everything. So I'll usually have it when I go out to dinner and there's a really, really good bread. I'll look at bread at some restaurants and say, it's not worth the back pain. I'll look at this bread and say, I don't care if I'm incapacitated for 24 hours. That is some good food, and that reminds me of having lived in Europe before, and my grandfather lived on bread and olive oil, you know, through much of his career. So I'll only do it if it's really worth it. But, you know, it might be dangerous. There might be some brain deficit still going on if I have it too often. That's not easy to pick up on, you know, brain deficit or heart. My heart scan is really, really good. So, and my scores on the test were really, really good. But
you mean a calcium scan score to look and see if there were abrasions in your heart valves comes out clear. You haven't had that going
almost on. Almost zero. On a scale of 0 to 2,500, I had a 3. So a single digit 3. Not 300 or, you know, 2,000,
But you like to get that perfect score on your medical test when they have to come around
again. That was pretty amazing.
Are you sure that wasn't just because you've learned a lot more since you were in medical school? Or do you really think it was the diet you eat?
I'm pretty sure that most medical doctors' scores decrease over the years. I'm pretty sure that's the general norm. Because when you come out of medical school, you remember all the data that's going to be on the test.
Well, so that's your experience. Have you ever had anyone where the food that they changed, either by adding it in or taking it out, completely surprised you that that's what worked for them?
Well, Amber surprised me. What were some of the other examples?
So you haven't had somebody who's allergic to zucchini or cauliflower.
No, but there was an example like that of a food that I didn't expect. So even when you talk to a conventional allergist, they'll say that the top two food allergens in the country are gluten and dairy. And then they'll say that the next one is peanut, and peanut tends to be more dangerous. It tends to create the anaphylactic allergic reaction as opposed to just the, rashes and dermatitis.
Okay, so the peanut allergy, people can't breathe. They have to carry an EpiPen if they get around even just a little bit of it.
And you could die in half an hour. Gluten and dairy doesn't do that. Yeah. That's not anaphylaxis. But there was a food. It wasn't a vegetable, but it was... here's another whole category that I've only learned about in the last few years, and that's the nightshades. A lot of people have joint pain from the nightshades.
Tomatoes, okra, basil, potatoes, white potatoes.
Basil. Oh, I'm so sad. You've just made me so sad. I didn't know basil was a nightshade. You know what else is a nightshade that makes me really sad? Goji berries. I love those raisins, those goji berry raisins. I don't have a lot of joint pain anymore, so I don't have to worry about nightshades, but I don't want to have it in the long run, which is what I was saying, my concern about still having some of these foods, even though I know they're not good for me. So I don't eat those bell peppers that I used to eat every day, those fresh bell peppers, right off the vine or out of the store.
Well, fortunately, there's a lot of other food that's good that you can eat.
Thank you. Also, I can make meat and vegetables taste really, really good. It usually just takes a little bit of salt, but it also tastes really good on the grill. So I'm out there at 6:30 or 7 in the morning grilling my salmon and Brussels sprouts twice a week at least. This week it was 5 times. That was the most I've ever gone out to grill. 5 times this week.
Hey, how many grams of protein? What's your ratio of protein to fat in your diet, do you think?
I don't measure my grams of protein because I don't think I can count that high.
Do you eat lean meats or do you eat fat meats?
I tend to eat lean meats, but then I eat a lot of olive oil, quite a lot of olive oil. And I usually have a teaspoon or a tablespoon of coconut butter. I like coconut butter instead of coconut oil because it tastes delicious. A spoonful of coconut butter is like a macaroon. It's like having a macaroon, a small macaroon in a teaspoon.
thank you. I appreciate all these stories, and I'll let you know when I put something together.
Thank you.
I'm Shelley Schlender. Our guest has been Paul Berger, a medical doctor in Boulder, Colorado, who specializes in holistic health. Thanks to my friend Lynn Patrick for this music. For more stories like this, visit meandmydiabetes.com.